seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're very welcome along to Golf Weekly on a Friday, no less. We are already underway at the Players' Championship. We have much to discuss. We'll look back on last week and we'll talk about what we've seen thus far in the Players. Nathan Murphy is alongside me. Hello.
How are you?
And Peter Lawrie has come in.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks for coming in, Peter Lawrie. Okay. On a Friday. Strange kind of atmosphere.
Yeah. Maybe we should do a daily, golf daily.
Golf daily, yeah.
And then when we turn up every week, people will be very impressed.
Mm. We are here with thanks to the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, which is on the way. Rumours of Tiger Woods arriving at the Irish Open. Just rumours at this stage.
Very much just rumours.
Yeah. I think it's literally based on the fact that he's said he's playing in the Open and someone said maybe he could use a warm-up.
Quite literally. So I was at the press conference up in Ballyliffin on Wednesday and I think it was Cathal Dervin, the sports editor of The Sun, said, any big names to tell us about? And as Rory, I think, had previously said, listen, Rory is not going down that route anymore. John Rahm is coming back. There's a lot of rumours that your buddy could be coming back, despite the toilet incident.
Matsuyama.
Hideki says he did enjoy himself.
I was on to him.
So there have been...
Hideki, you got to come back.
And he said, okay. And kept walking. There were rumours up there that maybe Hideki may commit, but that hasn't been confirmed. But they were saying, listen, it's worth $7 million. It's a Ryder Cup year. You would expect an awful lot of the big European players will be attracted because of that. They hope that some of the Americans over the next couple of months will look at their itinerary and think that's ideal. Then the point was made, Tiger's just said he's going to play the Open. Yeah. Now, how even that was a story, I'm not quite sure. And obviously Simon Alice, who was the tournament director, wasn't going to go, no place for Tiger here.
Yeah.
He said, well, listen, if Tiger wants to come, obviously we'd be very happy, but players' schedules aren't worked out. There's the US Open, there's all that sort of jazz. They're still figuring things out. We'd be delighted to have him. And that's sort
that
of as far
it.
As it went.
Well, I saw several articles on the basis of just that.
Well, it was that sort of press conference.
it was not as much
as you could take from it.
Not many big names announced just yet. It does seem like the US Open is holding up the bigger names.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they were to end up with five or six of the big American names. I think they're Justin Rose, they'd be hopeful would come over, Keimer, players of that sort of standard, even people like Alex Noren, who are sort of at that upper level of the European Tour. But it's pretty clear, I think, Rory's days of calling in favours are over. It's sort of standing on its own 2 feet.
Yeah, okay. We'll get to some of your tweets. A lot of scepticism when, I presume you tweeted last night that we'd do a Golf Weekly today?
I did. I thought if I put it out there, we'd have to do
it. Have to do it, yeah. So put to strut. Just sent a gif of Will Ferrell shaking his head saying, I don't believe you. So we're calling out you. Ned the Chief said, we'll hold you to that. Ned, here we are. Brian Hegarty relieved this afternoon when I tweeted we were doing it again. He said, I was seriously thinking of posting a critical tweet last night. I'm glad I didn't now. Hashtag friend of the pod. Tommy T19 replied last night, said, make up for it by getting Adam Lloyd Jones to do his impression of Tiger's mum when reading sections of Tiger's book, which has gone down very well. Me doing impersonations of
Tiger's book. Do it again.
I don't really want to.
You haven't done your Gary Player in a while.
No, I haven't done it. I'm not warmed up. It's a slow start. I'm on my day off here. I'm kind of, even now I'm feeling my way into this pod.
We've no Fionn Davenport, obviously, with us this week.
That's true.
Do you worry about Fionn that maybe just hangs around airports? Because I now have evidence. I was in Manchester yesterday.
Right.
I flew into Manchester Airport. Randomly sitting there in the waiting area was Fionn Davenport.
That's what a travel journalist does.
He has to be weird.
Seen. He has to be seen at airports.
Is this some sort of research project where you're trying to figure out Manchester Airport, a happy place when people land?
Yeah. The impersonation, Peter, of Tiger's mum is the new Tiger Woods book.
Yes.
One of the just throwaway lines, but it's bloody hilarious and I can't not stop thinking about it, is that Tiger's mum always referred to Phil as Fat Phil. How's Fat Phil?
All right.
Where's Fat Phil? Brilliant.
He looked pretty fat the other night, though, didn't he?
Oh, now, come on.
Huh?
Peter, come on.
No, let's be honest, okay? How could you wear a shirt like that playing golf?
We're going to get on to that. That's a topic for discussion, Phil.
Absolutely.
Shirt in round one of the players. One of us here is a fan.
I am a fan of Phil's, but not just of his wardrobe.
No, of the shirt.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're not.
I am.
That says a lot about you.
Brian Lennon, I thought you were going to skip the pod. It's not like there's an Irish victory to discuss this week. That sarcasm there from Brian.
Ah, good one, Brian.
We appreciate. Ah, lads, Phil's in that shirt again. At Golf Weekly OTB says, Sheelan Strain. Simon Fallon. A lot of people, I think what we've done for Tiger's book on this pod, what we did for Slaying the Tiger, there's a lot of people tweeting in, they're reading the book on the back of us talking about it. So Simon Fallon, I'm reading Tiger's book with a new vigour. He's saying we are. At Golf Weekly OTB are reading Tiger's book with new vigour so they can ask the hard questions when he arrives. Simon is believing the Irish Open rumours. That's what's going on.
Okay. Yeah. It could happen. Mm.
No. Mark McDonough wonders, do you think the French Open, Ryder Cup venue, being on the week before the Irish Open will affect the entry list? Very few players signed on so far. I suppose it could. If you were choosing between the two and you were in with a chance of making the Ryder Cup team, you might want to show that you can play the French course or get experience on it.
Well, an awful lot of guys have played the golf course already, but it would be nice to have played well there if you were looking for a captain's pick.
Do players, and say the leading 2025, do you get the sense when they're trying to work out their itinerary that they look at Le Golf National and think, pretty beautiful part of the world, just down the road from Paris, I'll bring the family, they'll have a good time, they can do the touristy thing, I'll play some golf.
I'm shaking my head here because no, they look at Paris National and they think, oh my God, that's a tough golf course. And I don't want to look like, you know what I mean?
So if you were Ian Poulter and maybe you're thinking, I have a very good chance of getting a wild card because of the way he's turned his form around. You're thinking, maybe I'd avoid Le Golf National because the last thing I want to do is shoot 10 over par, show that I can play those last couple of par fives and put some doubts in Thomas Bjorn's head.
Most definitely.
And will it work that Bjorn might get onto a Poulter and say, I'm thinking about you, but I want to see you on this course?
I think he would be asked by the European Tour to do something like that, to try and boost the field. Because the sponsors in Paris National have tried different ways to get a field there. You know, they pushed the prize money to $7 million a while ago and paid nobody appearance money, and that didn't work. So they went back and brought the prize money down and started paying people to come again. And that seemed to work a little bit better. They got in a few Americans into
players are put off by the difficulty of the course.
Very much so, yeah.
Interesting, right. Yeah. I didn't realise it was quite so difficult.
In previous years it had been, you know, you had knee-high rough just off the fairway. It's become a little bit easier now, and I presume for Ryder Cup it's going to be, you know, set up that little bit easier.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see, but in previous years it was very difficult.
Yeah. Does a tough setup and narrow fairways and high rough, like we know the green, we know what they'll do with the greens to suit the Europeans, they'll be that bit slower. But in terms of the course setup, fairway width and rough height, does a tougher course suit the Europeans or the Americans?
Oh, a tougher course suits the Europeans for sure.
Okay. So Phil doesn't want to stand up there and see the...
No, he doesn't want to see, you know, real heavy rough at all. Mm. Now,
I guess no one does. Rory doesn't want to see it. He wants to open his shoulders.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a balancing
but
act.
But golf has changed, you know what I mean? Like, golf has come, you know, really to a stage where, you know, everybody is so strong, they smash it out there. There's very few Daniel Darts out there anymore that are very successful. I'd say on America's team, you could get Matt Kuchar. Is probably Daniel Dart, but you could put everybody else into the slasher category.
Yeah.
And Europe is very similar.
That's why maybe the greens aside, because so many of the players are global players now and play on the PGA Tour anyway. But I find it hard to understand it when you hear pundits or players talking about, well, let's set up the fairways and the course to suit the Europeans, because I don't see any discernible difference between their game and the Americans' games, like at that elite level, not really.
No, the only difference would be probably around the greens, Joe, as I would say. They're used to having kind of heavy rough around the greens and playing flop shots out of it, while the Europeans, you know, having played an awful lot in America, they're used to that, but they much prefer, you know, seeing different shots around the greens.
Okay. I'm sure we'll come back to it before the Ryder Cup, but so if that's how the course generally sets up, do you think Bjorn would be under pressure because it's very much a TV event and we don't really want to see that kind of hacking out? We want to see birdies and we want to see a lot of people making shots. That actually, that will dictate things? It'll be a far easier course than we're used to during the French Open?
No, well, I would say it'll be a little bit easier this year, but I think when a Ryder Cup comes around, it'll be a whole lot easier.
Okay. So that's Mark McDonough wondering about the French Open. Oisin McAvinny will come to this as well. Nathan, it was a fairly soft Donegal day up here, so I can't wait to hear your review of the beast in tomorrow's pod. You were suitably blown off that course. We'll come to it in a second.
Yes.
Open Iceland, as Shane Larry refers to it. If Larry calls it Iceland, we can too.
As was noted by several people.
Is that right?
At Ballyliffin.
And I did try and stop him. Mark, if you go back and listen to the podcast, I actually tried to stop him because I was the one who probably started the saying it's a little bit too far away.
Unimpressed, were they?
I wouldn't be. I don't know if he got a call, but I would say that it was maybe made clear that in the promotion of this tournament, that if we didn't describe it as Iceland, it'd be beneficial.
Preferable. Okay.
It'd probably be preferable than if I didn't describe my round 2 days ago.
No. Truth above all else. You only have your credibility, Nathan. Miho Lofue says, tell me there's a player's preview pod, lads. This was a few days ago. Don't make me listen to Sky's one. We wouldn't do that to you, Miho. Ian Kane had a picture of the Tiger Woods book. Can't wait to read this. Christopher McCourt, trying and enjoying the Tiger Woods book. I feel like I'm studying for a book club meeting next week. We've postponed our book club meeting on Tiger's book until next week because Fiona's desperate to talk about it, frankly, and he's read the book as well. Anthony Coscorin says, Bank Holiday Golf at one of Ireland's many hidden gems, Connachar Wood and Castle Blaney. Spectacular views, great test. Worth a visit for anyone heading north for the Irish Open. Never had the pleasure myself.
I've heard it's brilliant,
but never played it.
Have you not? I just would have assumed you might have played every course in Ireland.
No,
really,
very few in Ireland. Very few.
Because you just turned pro and took off, kind of thing?
You're playing, events outside of Ireland the whole time.
Is that something maybe you are going to look to do over the next 10 years to tick off these hidden gems?
I'm thinking actually of setting up something that where you do reviews of the really decent golf courses. I know Ronan Rafferty did on our podcast with Fionn.
On ours, that's all right.
With Fionn.
Sorry, I thought you were on a new podcast that'll come out.
No.
That will be weekly on a Wednesday.
Yeah. we did try and do course reviews with some success initially and then no one had time.
I think Fionn would be very good at it.
Fionn doesn't have any time.
Yeah, well,
he'd be spectacularly good at it.
Yeah.
He'd be brilliant. I mean, it's his job, but
he's
a busy man. Actually, there is talk of us, we're playing Royal Dublin, are we?
Yes. We need to talk about that.
Do we?
Very soon, in the next couple of weeks.
On air or off air?
Both. Okay. But yes, it's going to happen.
We're doing something from the Christie Senior room there.
Yes. So we're going to chat about Christie Senior's life and play the course and all that.
Am I invited?
June 1st, of course.
Yes.
There's an open invite to anything we do, yeah. Royal Dublin, Friday, June 1st.
Friday, June 1st.
Ian H.
He's not so sure.
I have to check the diary for that.
You're not far from Royal Dublin, are you?
No, Royal Dublin love me.
Oh, that's okay.
Ian H. says I'm on holiday in Puerto Banos.
Puerto Banus.
Banus. Well done. It's harder to read it than it is when you hear it wrong.
Pier Hotel.
Just getting started on the Tiger book after hearing about it on at Golf Weekly OTB pod. These authors owe us one. Anthony O'Connell played a, guess what, another secret gem. Everyone calls them secret gems. Oh. Everything's a secret gem. Dunleary Golf Club, truly stunning.
How is Dunleary Golf Club a secret gem?
A hidden secret gem. He says it's a hidden
gem. It's hidden in that it's not
gem.
In Dunleary.
It's hidden and secret and a gem.
Well, I have to admit, I was up there the other day having a little meeting about you know what. And
I don't know what.
Don't know
well,
what.
You do. On. Well, you'll talk about it now in a few minutes, hopefully. I was really, really impressed with it.
It's fancy, isn't it?
Really impressed with it.
Right.
I thought, Jesus, if I was a member here, I'd be really happy. Having been to the old Dunleary.
Is it Linksy?
It's no, not Linksy at all. No. It's parkland, but it's spectacularly looking.
Anthony. Kind of Hoth, similar to Hoth.
No,
looking down.
No.
Not that mountainy.
No.
Okay.
I've only walked around bits of it. I went to interview Dan Carter out there one day.
Did you?
Good looking man.
Jeff Linnell. Jeff Linnell is just getting mentioned purely for the photograph. So he said, another great podcast. Good to see at Golf Weekly OTB living up to its name. That's the weekly part. Good strategy to get TV fame at Fionn Davenport back so the team can get into better pro-ams. But then he said, I'm listening in sunny Florida. The picture of the swimming pool here was off the charts. It was kind of a green tint to it, but that might sound like it was dirty in some way, but it wasn't. Now, the only thing was, it was a beautifully sunny day, an amazing view over some kind of greenery, but it was an indoor swimming pool in Florida. I'm never sure how I feel about an indoor swimming pool when it's very sunny. But
probably easier to clean. And you don't have any crocodiles when you wake up in the morning.
You've probably been in one before. Maybe the bath with the sun shining in the window.
Yeah, no, that's a great analogy. Yeah. It was very great Gatsby-esque, though. Very luxurious. Jeff, if this is your house, let's keep in touch. And
you could do the Florida swing and just stay in Jeff's.
And then Phil McCullough, 25 minutes ago. Lads, I don't mean to alarm you, but I leave work at 5. I would like to listen to this on the way home, please. It's a great chance. I have to shoot off today, by the way. I can't edit this.
Oh, well, either can I.
Really? Well, then we're in trouble. Do you mind not having your phone ring during the...
Mom, Peter.
It's my lovely Peter. Wife.
Well, tell her
well,
you're busy.
Yeah. You are busy.
I'm busy.
Okay, they are your tweets. We're moving on. So, let's actually start at Ballyliffin then, very briefly. I know the players is on. We've seen round one, round two is ongoing, but I want to keep this semi-relevant for people who might listen over the weekend. So you were at Ballyliffin, up in Iceland, for the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open Media Day.
Yes.
The weather was abysmal, by all accounts. The wind was horrific. Gusts of 50... Did I hear 50...
50 miles per miles? Hour.
Not kilometres, miles.
Not kilometres, miles per hour. Right. John Farron, who's running the show up there, was saying, yes, 50 miles per hour. And then for the last hour, so the final four holes, absolute torrential driving rain. With the 50 mile per hour wind. So much so we started on the back nine and the signature hole, which is the par 3/7, which is around 150 yards and about 100 foot drop down to
oh,
it.
Nice.
Lake on the right hand side, an unbelievably beautiful hole. It'll look ridiculously good with Malin Head in the background, the Atlantic Ocean, all of that.
And probably a natural amphitheater for fans.
I would imagine they're going to somehow put some sort of a stand in there as well. So from our group, I hit a 3-wood, two of the players hit driver. The wind was, that was when it was at its worst.
Straight into you.
Straight into us. Could barely keep the ball on the tee. And when you brought the club back, you also went back. Mm. So I think two of us didn't get the ball more than 5 yards. Not one person for the entire day, because it was closest to pin, not one person landed on the green.
That includes Peter Smith.
For the entire
day.
Des Smith.
Des Smith. I was looking at you.
And he was decent at golf.
Yeah, Smith was good at golf, yeah. So he didn't find the green.
No, not one person. But I think it was about 152 yards. There was, a lot of people took driver.
And in the press conference afterwards, was this completely abnormal type weather or this liable to happen?
It'll be probably a bit warmer at least because in, 8-9 degrees, that sort of rain, that sort of wind. I have a feeling that I sort of felt definitely on the back nine as it was for us, our front nine, that they would have taken the players off the course because the balls were oscillating
on the green.
On the green. Yeah. And you can't rule it out up there. It's part of the charm. It'll be a real test if the wind blows like that. If it doesn't, you would imagine the players, they won't have to hit driver on too many of the holes. They, on the fourth hole, have built a tee about 100 yards further back, which came up quite a lot in the press conference, that they were more or less admitting, if the wind is blowing in a certain direction, we're not actually going to be able to use this tee at all because it's 220, 25 yards to even reach the fairway. So into the wind, if the wind blows like that, it'd be impossible. That was my first time up there. Listen, it's a long way. It's 4 hours from Dublin. So you're not going to make a day trip of it. You're not going to get up early and come back that night. I'd say people would go up, spend
and
a couple of nights.
I would presume you drove straight to the course as well, as opposed to the old park and ride thing people will have.
We drove straight to the course.
You're giving yourself 5 hours, really, on the day.
Yeah, so I would say go up the night before. We went up on Tuesday evening, and there's a lot of accommodation around Derry, which is only half an hour or so away, which I'd say is where most people, if you're staying the night, will stay. Buncrana isn't that far away either, but it's very isolated. Like, I used to play a lot of golf in the island, and people talk about the island possibly hosting the Irish Open, and I was thinking, no chance. It's tucked away this little back road. How could they possibly, even though it's, 5 miles, 10 miles from Dublin? You go here, you think, well, actually, anything is on, because this is as isolated a golf course as you will find. Mm. You're literally looking out at Malin Head, the tip of Ireland. Mm. So the course itself, though, is spectacular. In terms of a Lynx course, I'd love to go back and play it. Straight away, wanted to go back because there were so many holes where it's a dogleg right and you're just not sure how much of a dogleg right, so you're hitting it straight down the fairway.
You needed a good caddy.
But now that I had my caddy at Adair Manor, this is all I'm thinking about now. I need somebody with me every time, telling me exactly what
have
to
you,
do.
Have you been up to Ballyliffin now?
Yes, I played it. Yeah, right. I played it many, many years ago in the West Coast Challenge. It was like a co-sanction between Main Tour and Challenge Tour at the time. Phenomenal golf course, absolutely Wonderful.
Okay. Difficult? Well, like what kind of score? I mean, I know it's all weather dependent.
Weather dependent. You know what I mean? You could see level par wind determined, or you could probably see 12, 13, 14 under.
Okay.
But fantastic golf course. Absolutely fantastic golf course.
Yeah. I must try and get up again between now and the Open.
Yeah, I think there might be opportunities between now and then to get up. They've spent a huge amount of money, I think, on the brand new clubhouse. So it's going to look the part.
Yeah.
You do just hope that the weather holds up, because it is going to be absolutely brutal if it's anything like it was on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, I guess that's true of most Irish Opens, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've been down at Parkland courses, I think Carton House, Adair Manor. I remember being at Adair Manor thinking that the roof was going to blow off the marquee in the middle of May. It'll just be a bit warmer, which is the main thing.
Up in Portrush, didn't they? They had the marquees done and they blew. No, sorry, Royal County Down. Some of the things blew off.
Yeah, I think if it's not raining is the main thing.
Yeah.
If it's dry and it's windy, it's fine. But yeah, it's a really interesting proper test of golf Lynx course.
Okay, great. Just to cast an eye back on the weekend that was, so we'll get to Gavin Moynihan and Paul Dunne in a second. Jason Day, who for understandable reasons didn't have a great 2017 between mother's cancer diagnosis, talked about his wife's miscarriage as well, described the whole year as a kick in the ass, and actually said he got to a point where he was talking after his win at the Wells Fargo just gone, where he said he got annoyed at himself because he got to a point last year where he said, well, I'm just a bit burnt out. It's okay to have a year off. That really bugged me. But that's how he felt. So he kind of didn't work as hard as he might usually do. So he won the Wells Fargo, 2 wins and 7 starts for him. He won the Farmers Insurance at Torrey Pines in January. Up until last night, ironically enough, he hadn't missed a putt inside 5 feet all season. Some going. And I think he's 92, 93% from 10 feet and under, which again is kind of nuts. I don't know, did you see much of it? He didn't actually play brilliantly on Sunday. He really didn't. And even
statistically, it was one of the tee to green, it was one of the worst rounds any tournament winner has had in recent PGA Tour history.
Yeah. And he hit the flag stick on 17 at the par 3. That could have been in danger of rolling off. So,
well, he got lucky there, didn't
he?
Yeah,
he didn't have his best stuff, but he won anyway. So 2 wins and 7 starts. His putting, though, stats I couldn't get over. He is so deliberate in everything he does. I mean, he's just like a machine. I don't get any joy watching Jason Day, even though technically, certainly from a visual point of view, he's perfect in every way. I just can't. I just don't get excited by anything
he
does.
Isn't he? And I don't know how, because there's an awful lot to like.
He's a great guy
about him. He comes across as such a good guy.
I really like him as a person. But I'm just saying, as a player, nothing he does excites me.
No, he's getting to the stage though where you're wondering, is he achieving what he should be achieving? Because I think he's won 10 times now in the last 3.5 years, and even in that, he had a really poor spell where he did nothing for quite a while. So he needs to get past one major, but he's won at 2 really difficult golf courses this year. So you'd expect a US Open or a PGA Tour or PGA at the end of this season. He's got to go contend.
Yeah.
He needs to get his driver sorted out. He was hitting it sideways quite a lot when he won even. On the Sunday, he hadn't got a clue where it was going, but managed to get it around the golf course. And as you said, he's unbelievable putting stats. He's got Jordan Spieth-like putting stats in his heyday.
Never last.
Nevertheless, told you what.
In his heyday. Jordan Spieth is like 58 now. Like Spieth in his heyday.
His heyday.
There, you know, 5 weeks ago.
Has he done anything since the Masters?
Three weeks ago. It's the Masters a month ago.
Yeah.
What have you done since the Masters? What has anyone done?
We barely done a podcast.
Yeah. Come off it now. Actually, on the number one situation, because Dustin Johnson is trying to hold off any number of permutations. It's unlikely, though, especially because Johnson has started well. But Justin Thomas is hot on his heels. Jason Day is hot on his heels. He moved up to 7. John Rahm, Jordan Spieth, average. And hey, Justin Rose, if things go very well for Rose. But it's unlikely, given that Johnson has started well.
Quick this one for Jason Day. So we know that Jason Day getting to world number one was everything for him. And it wasn't about winning majors. It was about being the best golfer in the world. It was his motivation throughout his life. Do you think that's actually, when you get there then, it's different because you suddenly achieved everything? Whereas if you're a normal golfer who it's all about winning majors, well, there's always the next one. There's always...
You've kind of almost read where I was going with that. So that's the world number one fight. Day was talking about it after Sunday. And they asked him, you know, about maybe getting back to world number one. He said, I got so burnt out being world number one. It's very easy to get burned out in a position like that. You're constantly in the spotlight. It's very demanding. And that old cliche of you've got to give your time to people. Sometimes you don't get a lot of time to yourself to practice. So he felt, number one, completely burnt him out, which is kind of interesting. And Dustin Johnson is into his 65th consecutive week at world number one. Doesn't seem to have much of a toll on him at all.
Don't think he gives too much of his time away, though, does he?
Well, maybe not, yeah. He was he did the range, live range thing on Wednesday with Sky, because Butch was there, obviously. So Butch strong-arms him into doing it. And he was saying he feels like he's playing really well this year, Dustin Johnson, but just hasn't had the wins. So it's not surprising to see him doing well.
Maybe he needed this little bit of a kick up the backside of everybody all week talking about the five guys who may become world number one ahead of him.
Yeah. So that was Day. And then Gavin Moynihan and Paul Dunne won Golf Sixes. Didn't seem much.
I saw Gavin Moynihan chipping in when they said he should have been putting.
In the semi-final. Mm. So Gavin Moynihan had previously earned €128,000 on tour in his career. The vast majority of that came from the Irish Open last year when he tied 14th. So he doubled his career earnings in 2-3 days' work.
Absolutely fantastic for Gavin. Bank balance, great. But in relation to for tournaments, to get into tournaments, and you know, it's going to prove useless to him at this moment in time.
He's missed the cut in all 8 events this season.
Yeah.
So he's not playing well. 23 years old still.
I wouldn't say he's not playing well. I think he's probably lost a little bit of confidence in himself. So I think this might help him. The European Tour is a big bad world, and it takes your brain to get that sort of, you know, trying to get you used to that, what it's like being playing with the big players and, you know, big names and stuff like that, galleries and different golf courses. It's a world different from the Challenger Tour. So it'll just take him a little bit of time. This will help him. But hopefully, you know, he will use this and use the confidence of this to progress rather than, you know, go out celebrating too much.
Damn, I thought you were going to say he will use the money to have a good time.
It's interesting considering it's a sort of European Tour initiative.
Yeah. What was the format? For people saying I knew this was on and I saw some social media hype, what was the gist of it?
The gist of it was a 6-hole matches.
Yeah.
And they had the ladies playing as well. And over the 6 holes, you had either up or down. So, you know, you could win 6 up. You could win, you know, 3-2, whatever it may be. But that was the gist of it. It was matches, and then you were seeded, and then you played against each other, and you got to the final, and then they played off in the final.
Okay.
And the second and third played off.
Did you like it?
No, I thought it was a terrible idea.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no interest in it either. I don't consider it golf. I don't think.
No,
holes is too short.
I think it has potential though for sort of off weeks, and has potential to draw people in. I was talking to some of the European Tour people about it, and they were very happy. Like it's a European Tour event. It's very much a local event, and they got a huge crowd from the local area just north of London, and they got a lot of kids in, and people didn't have to be quiet while they were taking shots. You could do whatever you wanted, so it was a very different feel. And obviously having the female golfers in as well, I thought was a good idea, but there weren't too many big names. Firstly, so they win $100,000, brilliant. But if they want to make it serious, you have to give them world ranking points or exemptions. Like, they're ultimately, Paul Dunne dropped down the world rankings last week, despite winning the tournament. There's no exemption for a year for Gavin Moynihan on the European Tour, which would have been life-changing. But I do think and I was sort of making the point, what about if a JP McManus-type figure, instead of just getting the 4 lads down to a Adair Manor, thought, let's have the Super Sixes. I'm going to pay Rory, Tiger. Instead of doing the Pro-Am, you do this. I think for that type of format, once or twice a year, maybe. It's the type of thing I would say they're looking at that you could have maybe in the middle of London.
Call me an old fart, right?
I
not for the first time. If we have Rory and Tiger at an event and you're doing the bloody Golf Sixes, to me that is a giant waste of time. I don't consider this golf. I like when I go to a golf tournament that people actually go quiet and pay attention to a shot. Not that a shot is happening sort of in the corner and we're in a chat and ignoring it.
Yeah, but you
I
know don't what, like, Joe? I people don't like don't go to golf tournaments because they have to go and keep quiet because they can't trust their kids to keep quiet because you have to tell their child, shh.
I don't believe that, actually. I'm at a golf tournament. You don't have to stay that quiet. I mean, you can stand around the green and watch the tee shots and you can sort of chat away and, okay, you have to be quiet a little bit around the greens. But I mean, I like golf for golf, you know, and I think we just.
But you have as much golf as you want. There's any amount of golf.
Yeah, but this the Sixers did nothing for me. I don't know, is that suddenly going to win over a crowd? Because it's still not cool. Like, you've got to compare it to other sports. I saw something on social media where they had, like, a, you know, the 1 2-minute insert on Twitter, and it was this guy hitting balls through a target in the distance. As if, like, that's going to bring in the kids. As if that's so much more exciting than just golf.
Can I ask a question? In relation to you're saying about the kids were allowed to come in and make noise, right? So the kids come in, make noise, right? So then they go to their local golf club. You know, are they allowed to make noise when they're playing then? Are they allowed to have the ghetto blaster, you know, on?
Maybe they should be. Why shouldn't they be?
I just think it ruins
the sport. No, so do I.
I just think the sport is the sport. Yeah. Like, and if people don't play it anymore and it dies, it dies.
I think that's what might happen.
Maybe it will. I always think there'll be enough people who'll enjoy the many brilliant things about the sport. I don't think the golf sixes or shortened formats actually are that much better. I just don't.
No, I don't think they're better. I don't think that's better than a good regular tournament. But I do think it's as good as the Rocket 4 to open this week.
Oh, look, sure. I'm not watching that either. I'm in a consenting caliber player.
I think there's a different way of doing things the odd time. They're trying to figure something out. Mm. I think they're getting a crowd. It looks interesting. It looks exciting. I think you're more likely to sit and watch that on a Sunday afternoon than you are the Sicily Open or whatever it is this
probably
week.
Agree with that. I probably do agree.
But is there too many tournaments? Is that a problem?
Yeah, well, I think they've increased the tournaments substantially on the European Tour this year, which they'd probably look as success.
Yeah.
But the Rolex Series has remained, I think, the same number-wise. So, again, it's a lot of these tournaments for small money.
I mean, the PGA Tour wraparound season does feel like, I mean, around November time, it's very hard to get excited about.
Well, even that, like, there's some Sundays and some Saturday nights you wouldn't even watch the golf because, you know, there's nothing happening, really.
Yeah.
Like, is there too many golf tournaments? Is that our problem?
Potentially. They all seem to make money and bring in sponsors. Every PGA Tour event is sponsored.
It's sponsored, yes, and they do great for charity and all the rest. But European Tour-wise, you know, should there be only 20 events in total? And there should be 20 events on Challenge Tour and have them big events and inner rounds and people actually get interested. Do we have too much of it? And that's a good question to ask.
Mm.
But I didn't like the Golf Sixes. I didn't like, you know, people being played onto the tee, as I didn't think it was a great idea when Porrick and Shane played the Paris thing in America.
Did you know? I didn't really watch much of it, I have to say. I've no problem with the music on the tee box. I don't think it's going to save golf. I don't think it's going to make any difference. I don't think it's enough for whatever uninterested generation we're trying to target here. I don't think a bit of music on the tee box is going to do much.
No, I don't think it's going to save golf. Yeah. And I don't think anything really that the PGA Tour and the European Tour do is going to save golf unless it's somehow speeding up the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know what
dramatically?
Do you know what I'd suggest? Because I just think the game is the game, right? And it's an amazing game. I would be in favour, having watched Phil and Tiger and Ricky Fowler take 6 hours last night, but stayed with them for a lot of it. Mm. Like, it was a fairly slow evening. I'm actually not, the visuals wouldn't be brilliant. I'm now not against them having carts to bring them to their ball. I'm not against them hitting off hitting their driver, hopping in carts, getting up to their ball, hitting their shot, cart up to the green.
What happened to the shot clock? They brought the shot clock in for a tournament last year.
Yeah, that's coming back, isn't it? That's in Austria, I think, this year.
Mm. Does anyone object to me having the cart in the
players? No, I'd agree with you. Yeah, look,
yeah,
they do it
certainly
on the
for your regular tournaments.
TV point of view. Okay, the majors, they walk the course. Mm.
Yeah.
But for the regular events, how much time would be saved? You would cut their 6 hour round probably down to 3 hours, wouldn't you?
Oh, easily, yeah.
Maybe 2.5. Three.
Yeah, three hours. Yeah.
I think that is a no-brainer. I think if I was sitting at board level now and we were talking about music, where frankly you've got these overweight lads in their 50s dancing to rap music on the tee and the whole thing just looks naff. It's like your dad in the corner at a wedding. It's embarrassing. Instead of that...
My dad can dance.
I'm sure he can. I just don't want to see him on a tee box doing it. I just think the no-brainer for me, we need to speed this thing up from a TV point of view. We've got Tiger and Phil and Ricky Fowler. Let's make it a concentrated, brilliant 3 hours. I just think the carting, cart them to their ball, boom, boom, boom. Visually, it might look amazing, but you know what? You can find a way around it from a TV point of view. Hey, maybe even get cameras on the cart and maybe they do a quick interview to camera as they're going down. There's so many things you could do, but instead having them walk to their ball and it's like another ad break and let's go to Mark Rowe and chat to him for 5 minutes.
I'll tell you how long their round of golf was. I was over in Manchester last night playing a game of football.
Yeah.
I was waiting for my game to start, and I saw online that Tiger was just playing the first. I was at home in my house in Dublin, sitting down, watching them playing the 18th, having played a match and flown back from Manchester.
I felt like I watched
those private jets are wonderful.
Yeah, right.
Dennis Brogidiosky. I felt like, I mean, it was on. It felt like three different days. I felt like I was watching a test match cricket, trying to follow them because I was into it. But it was like every time they hit a shot, an ad break or go away from them.
You doze off a little bit, just a head goes.
I went and read a book for a while. I was back to it. I had a bit of dinner, but I was keeping an eye on it. But I wasn't, if I knew it was 3 hours and they were nipping around the course,
yeah,
I would
have
been,
everyone
be quiet.
I think you could sell that.
We're watching this.
You could properly sell that and say, prime time, Thursday night, Tiger, Phil, Ricky, 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock, well, for us, but whatever time it is over there. You can go and actually market this instead of, well, tune in that you might have them. And
I'm going to write an email to the PGA Tour and to the European Tour and just lay this out. Okay, the integrity of the majors walk the course, and there's enough drama and suspense to make the walking exciting, and you want to see the body language they walk down the course. But on the second, on a Thursday at Wells Fargo, just get them to their ball.
But then you're going to have shorter fields.
Why?
Because you'll have players bunched up the whole time.
Will they be?
Yeah. See, this is a big problem. This is the problem on a Thursday and Friday of too many people in the field.
Okay, well, I don't mind. As terrible as it is, that's fine. Yeah. If golf wants to survive and really be a good product, you need the big names.
You need smaller fields and much quicker.
Most of them aren't.
15-minute intervals, whatever else, let them go.
Most of them aren't on TV anyway.
No.
There are no loss to the TV audience, and it's about a TV audience. And I know it's a dreadful thing to...
Unfortunately, it is.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that. But how are we going to play? Oh, the golf sixes.
Can I just say something here, right?
Yeah.
As you said, this sport is dying, right? Imagine if you had horse racing, okay? Mm-hmm. And you were allowed to bring somebody from the crowd to ride your horse. How stupid would it look?
Quite stupid.
And
but I'd watch it.
but golf now is starting to do that. This kind of golf sixes are where they're getting the crowd to come in and hit a shot.
Are they?
Right. They did it in par threes or whatever else. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just
like
gimmicky.
You would never do it. Like, imagine putting a 50-year-old up on a horse to race around the track. Just wouldn't happen.
Mm. It'd be dangerous, you see.
Or getting Nathan Murphy to take a penalty at the Etihad.
Yeah, whatever.
So I just think golf is golf. Golf is a 72-hole tournament. It's individual. Like, you know, Bobby Jones is turning in his grave. You know what I mean?
Well, let's make him turn some more. We'll move on. Jordan Spieth talking about the players. I think this should be a major. I really do. Given the caliber of player, look, the entire top 50 in the world is here. And when everything is weighed up, it's the strongest field in golf. It also has that extra vibe, that aura that the other four majors possess. Just the way guys talk about it at this place. Well, it's different. It absolutely should become a major, says Jordan Spieth. This talk always bubbles up in the few days before golf's unofficial fifth major. Anyone for turning it into a fifth major?
The players is like 9-inch nails. Americans seem to get it more than we get it. Like this huge thing over there. I like the players.
Yeah.
I'll sit down and watch it. It is a brilliant field, so you'll generally get a good leaderboard. But I wasn't on Monday and Tuesday planning my weekend about what's going to happen, as you would with any of the actual majors. The best point I saw made about it was, if the players, some event has to be the best other tournament.
Yes.
So if the players becomes a major, suddenly what's the sixth major that they're going to try and market it as for
point,
the next 10 years?
Irish
there
Open.
Has to be...
The Dubai Duty Free.
The Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, which is essentially a major already.
Well, it is.
It is.
It's major.
The Open, is. They should just rename it. The players is great. It is what it is. Just leave it at that.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's, I presume they're not considering it seriously. I think it's just idle pre-tournament media talk to fill pages. Also, I think you then would have four or five majors all in the USA. Mm. Like, it's such an insular thing, Spieth, to say, oh, well, it's our best tournament on the PGA Tour, so make it another major.
Mm. Are they going to make the BMW PGA major?
Well, that's what,
the equivalent.
Yeah.
And as well, like, I think, again, to be the all fart, there is such a lovely thing. Golf, more than most sports, has maintained a link with history. And so if you have a fifth major, it just ruins the integrity of Jack's record and trying to break it. Like, imagine Tiger Woods had an extra 15 chances than Jack did to set a major record. You almost have to then draw a line in the sand and someone will beat Jack's record then. And
it's not the same,
it just ruins it. Like, there's such a lovely link with the past, and it's relevant in a way that, like in football, it doesn't feel, the Premier League feels irrelevant to John Giles' day. It just does. Whereas, God, we're talking about Hogan as if it's absolutely relevant to what players are doing now in their 20s.
So if you were to suddenly, and here it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they decide golf is dying and we need a fifth major and a bit of razzmatazz.
Yeah.
So do we suddenly say Tiger's won 16 majors? And I would say even Tiger's going, wait a second.
Yeah.
If I'd known the Players was a major for the last 20 years, I probably would have had a slightly different approach to this.
And I presume Jack's won the Players a few times.
I think so.
I watched one the other night where I think he won.
Yeah, and Rory would have played it in it more.
So how do you size that up?
I don't know how you do
and
it.
And also, is there a constitution somewhere where it's written down, these are the four majors, or do we suddenly wake up one morning and they're like, the Players, the fifth major, and we all go, okay.
No. Yeah, I don't
it's
know.
It's not going to happen. No, it's a bit like Tiger Woods playing the Irish Open. That's not going to happen.
Will you stop that now?
That could happen.
I heard.
It was in the papers.
I heard from, well, I won't name
They're
my
not
friend.
Ruling it out.
His initials are HM, plays on tour. He told me Tiger Woods is definitely playing in the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Hideki.
Oh.
Just Hideki.
HM. Which Irish players? HM. No.
No, Hideki's my only contact on tour.
All right.
As for the Players last night, we had Tiger Woods blocking everything right. He had two bogeys, one eagle on the front nine, two birdies, two bogeys in the back nine. And we had Rory minus one yesterday. And then we had Phil just about breaking 80 with a 79, 41 on the back nine. It was hard to understand what was going on with Phil.
It was the shirt.
Ah, no. I thought it was great. I love the shirt.
The shirt is shocking.
Shocking.
It made me think Tiger has spent his entire life wanting to be a Marine. Phil has spent his entire life wanting to be an investment banker.
I know. I just thought it was class. I think if most of the players had done it, I wouldn't have liked it. I think anything Phil does is brilliant.
Right. I remember, I have to tell you this story. I was only thinking about it yesterday when I saw Phil. I played the Johnny Walker in India, of all places, right? Really, really hot. And Ian Poulter had just done a deal with Johnny Walker to wear their colours, you know, for the different colour bottles. So one day he turns up on a Thursday in a gold outfit, right? And it was rubbery gold. Now you can imagine rubbery gold outfit, okay, on a really, really hot golf course in India, okay? So he finishes after the round, comes in, and there's nowhere to sit in the Players' Lounge, you know? So he sits down and he's just shot 79, right, in this rubbery outfit. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I went, gotta blame the outfit. And Phil, the same thing. You gotta blame the shirt. It's just absolutely.
Really? You're that against it?
Absolutely.
I thought it was very smart. I like Justin Thomas's outfit as well with the tie.
I didn't mind
the
that.
Open last year.
Yeah.
But this, Justin Thomas is young, cool, sort of.
But it was warm and he's wearing a long sleeve shirt.
Yeah, it wasn't very flattering.
No.
Actually, as Phil,
it was very much a.
Now we're actually turning you against it, aren't we?
Well, Monday morning, going to work, gotta wear a suit. Yeah. God, I just can't believe I'm still
and
doing this.
And the missus
didn't
even iron it.
If he lights it up, it suddenly changes the complexion of how
there
we look
go.
At it. You know, it do, winning makes everything okay. Yeah. But has Phil put on a few? He didn't look good. He just didn't look good, Phil, even though he started well yesterday. Tiger blocked everything right. There's people, I was watching the Golf Channel, they were kind of doing a bit of analysis afterwards, and they were like, it's only his eighth event. I know he started back great, but they're looking at Tiger and they're thinking, the putter was better yesterday, but they're saying this could be a year before he kind of is back to realistically challenging it. What did you see? Give us the technical.
The technical with Tiger is he struggles off the tee full stop. You know, he can go onto the range and he hits it lovely on the range, 90%, you know, gets it out there. On the golf course, He's like a madman, really. You know what I mean? He gets it to the top and he tries to hit it as hard as he possibly can.
They were talking a lot about they were saying, I joined it on the second and they were saying, or third, and they were saying, let's see here, will he leave a bit of a pause at the top of his backswing on the tee? Mm. Obviously just too quick.
Yeah. But even like look at the iron shot he hit up the last into the water. He's still not there yet. And I think everybody expects him to be somewhere where he's not. And it takes a bit of time to come back into that kind of competitive practice.
Statistically, last week, it seemed to flip. So his stats around the greens are sensational, leading in strokes gained putting, whereas last week he couldn't hold a putt, yet seemed to improve considerably off the tee. And then I actually thought, oh, well, maybe he's ironed that out and the putting will naturally come back. But then watching him again last night, it seemed as if we're back at Tiger pre-Masters again.
Yeah.
Sideways.
So we'll see how he goes. He's, I mean, he finished level. It was perfectly respectable, but just that's what he kind of is now. He's a mid-ranking PGA Tour golfer at the moment. Rory, as I said, finished on minus one. Doesn't have an amazing record here. On Wells Fargo, he had a second round 76 and then reversed into a top 20 finish. He was saying last week, I'm just not that comfortable with anything right now, which was kind of worrying. I'm trying really hard to hit it in the fairway, and then I'm trying really hard to get my irons on line. It's all my irons on line. It's all just a bit of a struggle, which was
for a guy who was worrying. Actually flushing it for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and then couldn't hold a putt. And now he's concerned about that he's not comfortable.
Yeah. Some problems with his putter last night as well.
Interesting.
Did he? I didn't see much of... He wasn't even on. Oh, he was finished early. Mm-hmm. That's why he wasn't on much last night. So we'll see if he turns around. He doesn't have a great record there. It's do you like that course? Have you ever played it?
Never played it, no.
Seems to be quirky. Pete Dye is kind of quirky best.
I actually thought Francesco Molinari would have done well this week. I haven't even looked at him. He was leading... he was leading strokes gained from tee to green, but he was putting horrendously bad last week that he played, and I thought I'd fancied him this week. He normally does quite well around there.
Right now, midway through the second round, Chesson Hadley, Patrick Cantlay on 9-under, 3 shots clear of Cooch, Schwartzel, Ram, Stricker, DJ, Webb Simpson, Alex Noren. It's a tasty enough.
I got Alex Noren at 50-1.
That's a tasty enough
courtesy of Paul McGinley.
Courtesy Paul McGinley.
On Wednesday, he said the course, because he said Alex Noren is kind of a bit good at everything without being exceptional at anything, but it's a course which actually demands a lot of variety.
Yeah, and Alex is very good at it. He can shape the ball very well. Yeah.
Tiger's still level after six.
All right, it's perfect.
Molinari?
Respectable.
No
Molinari, I'm going to have to search for Molinari. Bryson DeChambeau was 400. Did you see Butch talking about Bryson?
I got the impression Butch didn't think much of Bryson.
I most definitely got the impression Butch doesn't think much of Bryson.
And almost realised midway through he was completely slating him and said, but he is very eloquent and, you know. Yeah. But and, he didn't like him doing the Epsom salts
Murray,
with his ball.
Ewan Murray said, well, listen, it's great in life, you know, not everybody's the same. Well, that guy definitely isn't.
Bush suspicious of him, I think.
Well, what was it? He was claiming that not every golf ball was round. Yeah. And he was like, well, I guess all those guys winning majors for the last 50 years were doing it wrong. Mm. And Bryson, I think, went, yes.
Yes,
yes they were.
Yeah. We are pretty much finished. We are going to bring you some instruction tips to finish. At the end of each pod, we've recorded some of these. So... actually, our TV has gone off in here, Shane. You might flick it on for us if you can.
While we're doing that, Peter beside us is launching a big business.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
You might have time for us soon.
I'll always have time.
Multi-millionaire.
No, I don't think about that. But, look, we... We've set up a booking engine, and it's been fully endorsed by the GUI, and it's going to be called GolfNet. We're currently live in 11 clubs.
Is that something else called GolfNet now?
GolfNet is where you store your handicap.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you'll be able to book tee times on it, which you haven't been in the past. So we're going live as of today in Swords and Rogenstown, two courses. And we have another 11 around the country, and we're doing okay.
So is this if I randomly wake up on Friday morning and suddenly I have free time and I want to look around and see where there's somewhere available, or do I need to be a member of that course?
No, you can do both. You can become a member, but the way we looked at it, we wanted a three-click booking for a member to make it very easy for members. And then for visitors, much easier way to book and much better for the actual golf clubs.
And how is this different to when I go on, I think I go onto GolfNet already and might look for an open comp?
Yes. So what we're going to be able to do is the golf clubs are able to set up their open competitions and they're going to go directly into your open competitions. Normally the golf club set up the open and then they have to go into another system.
You have to go to their website at times.
Into their website to do it, but we're going to have a direct access.
Okay.
But also we're going to help golf clubs actually be financially more secure, get more for their green fees than they have been in the past. A lot of them have been devalued by other certain products that are out there. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to wipe that out and give access back to the golf clubs and give them more control of their own tee times.
Great. So golfnet.com?
All the information is www.bookgolf365.ie.
Okay.
But if you look up the GUI website or if you look up any of the papers at the moment or on the website, we're all over the place.
Okay. Great. I didn't realise that. Best
there
of
you
luck.
Go. Very Thank good. Thank you.
Brian Boschel is the one of the coaches out at the Pelts Academy at Killeen Castle. And a while back we went out and recorded some tips with him. So we're going to bring you one now. This is Brian explaining how to hit a bunker shot.
We're continuing our short game series here at the Pelts Academy at Killeen Castle. Brian Boschel is putting us to our paces and giving you some tips to help improve your game. So, the dreaded bunker. I am one of those who hates these. So, Brian, talk to us.
Yeah, it's. I suppose anyone who's played here in Killeen will know for definite it's a shot you need to be good at around here, a lot of deep bunkers.
Yeah.
One of the biggest issues we would see with golfers in a bunker is, and I know this is going to sound a little bit silly, but they try and get the ball out of the bunker. So they don't trust their setup, they don't trust their swing. We'd see a lot of people when they make their swing, they're hanging back, they're trying to lift the ball up in the air, and that creates an awful lot of the issues because they're trying to create things with their hands and their arms rather than, like what we've spoken about before, using the big muscles from a good setup to produce a consistent motion. So really what we want to do is start people from a square position simply so they can trust the same motion they were doing with their wedge shots for the 40-yard shot. The swing in the bunker is the exact same. We're looking for a rotation back until the left arm gets the parallel to the ground, what we call our 9 o'clock backswing. One of the key components in good bunker play is having width in the backswing. We see an awful lot of people get quite narrow, which leads to a lot of chopping down on the golf ball. Another misconception we get a lot in the bunker is about this idea of why we open the club face. We'd have a lot of people come along and tell us that you have to hit the sand, you have to hit into the sand, like take a dollar bill, poached egg, all these descriptions that we hear. The ball is forward in our stance in the bunker because we're not trying to contact the golf ball, we're trying to contact the sand. So the bottom of the swing is about 2 inches ahead of our center, which is here. So that's where the club will contact the sand once I rotate my body. So putting all that together, ball's opposite the left instep, front foot's flared, neutral body position. We've got the face open, and as you said, the grooves are pointing towards the toe of the lead foot. Nice neutral body position, nice soft hands and arms. And then from there, we're making the same motion. We're rotating back, rotating through, finishing with the body pointing at the target. And one of the key things we would see with bunker play with a lot of people is because the club is digging in the sand, they feel like they really have to hit it. But realistically, your rhythm in the bunker should not be changing from your rhythm with your 40-yard wedge shot.
Okay, that's a great one. I'm sure that will help lots of you out at home. We will have more from Brian in our series here on Golf Weekly. As usual, Golf Weekly podcast goes out every Thursday. You can get us on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. So just search Golf Weekly and you'll find us. And we are at Golf Weekly OTB. There we go. That's the lads out of Killeen Castle. Brian Boschel. You can obviously check all those out on the Facebook page as well. They're probably better to watch.
Yeah, they're going up every week. And I think you can get the entire collection on youtube.com/offtheball.
Can I throw one thing in, actually, that he gave me, which transformed bunker play? I've never been good at a bunker. It's always been a... I have to put a lot of force into it just to get the ball out at all. I mean, I figured I knew all the science of it and what you meant to do. The really interesting thing was that we were hitting some bunker shots and I still wasn't having a huge amount of joy, even with all the various tips. And it was just something I'd never thought before. He said, get your hands much lower at address. So, as soon as he said it, I suddenly thought, oh, visually, that is right. You often see the players with their hands almost down around their kneecaps sometimes, you know, where they're squatting down in. And I guess the angle of the club is much flatter as opposed to a bit, as it might be at address or whatever. And
so you can get more loft on it.
Well, I don't know what the hell it did, but I did exactly the same swing. And honestly, it was like heaven had just happened. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I actually couldn't believe it. And I spent the next 15 minutes just hitting clean one after clean one. Even Fionn was looking over going, that's unbelievable. And it wasn't one of those things where you go away for a few days and, you know, I went to play Luttrell's 10 then a few days later. And I went and I hit a few into a bunker. I was on my own. And it was just there. So, it's just something you'd never think, are my hands too high at address? So, obviously, people have different fixes and a million different things going on. But I would just say, if you think you're doing most things right, just actually, because I'd been playing for 5, 6, 7 years and it hadn't occurred to me, just get your hands much lower. Because you do, Peter, see, when you picture great bunker players, they're often very squatted and hands are low.
Yeah, what that happens is if you your hands if you drop your hands a little bit, right,
yeah.
you're actually, you sort of get your wrists in a more cocking position,
right?
So it's much easier for you to use your wrists and to set the club. So now you've set the club open. Now you just turn through it, and all of a sudden the ball comes out quite soft.
Well, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I never see it mentioned much in all the Golf Digest magazine articles on Bunker Player, all the YouTube videos. They always, you know, they talk about the stuff Brian talked there, and it was interesting. Brian said, Jay, your hands, you're just too high. The club, at the angle of the club is too steep.
Yeah. An awful lot of Bunker Play is setup, right?
Yeah.
Once you have your setup, you're pretty good.
Yeah.
And then it's more a case of, it's a feel thing more than anything else. But you definitely, as you say, you know what I mean, you need to use a little bit more wrists in a bunker. So you have to sort of set the angle and then just turn through it. So by you dropping your hands, you activate your wrists a little bit more.
Okay, very good. We're pretty much done. Nathan, I know you've got a busy afternoon ahead. You just checked, by the way, there, Jack Nicklaus and his players record.
3 of them.
Okay.
Shane, our producer, has just informed me.
So do we want to have Jack Nicklaus on 21 majors suddenly?
He's one Tiger of the players never more catch than anybody else.
There you go. Has he? Oh, Tiger's won it once, certainly.
Twice.
So that would be 21-16.
21-16.
So that would move Jack 5 ahead instead of just the L4. Mm. Yeah.
Never to be caught.
Won't happen.
Not a chance.
Not a chance. All righty. On that note, that's Golf Weekly for this Friday afternoon, and we'll see you next Thursday and reflect on the players. Good luck. Go and tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.